Even in death, it was still a threat. Jeff braced for impact. The sentinel skittered across the deck, limbs and tail spread wide, its claws screeched against the metal. Then, just a few feet from Jeff, it slowed to a stop. A long death rattle escaped the alien. Jeff hopped down from his perch, using the alien's body for a cushion, then slid the rest of the way down to the deck.
"That was crazy," David said.
Jeff couldn't tell if his brother was scolding him or praising him. He didn't have time to ask. The first few spiders poured into the opposite side of the vehicle hold. They didn't seem to have seen Jeff or David yet, and Jeff wasn't about to let them.
"Time to go outside," he said.
They scrambled through the corridor to a gash in the sunspot side. Outside, the lines of aliens climbing into the transport ships were getting shorter. There wasn't much time before they were loaded up and off chasing Sophie and the others.
"Come on, bro,"
Jeff said, helping David down onto the soil. They sprinted between rocks and craters, using them for cover. All the while, Jeff stole glances behind to ensure no organics had trailed them from the ship. The last of a line of spiders loaded up onto one of the transports. The aliens disappeared in the depths of the huge ship. Then, a minute later, the rear hatch closed and the ship took off. That left just one more for them to hitch a ride on. Jeff knew he should be more careful, but he sprinted now, holding David by the wrist. They flew over the landscape, bounding with the low gravity. Jeff stumbled a couple of times, but rolled and picked up the pace once more. They had to make that ship. To miss it would be disastrous. They would be stuck here trying to survive on whatever scraps remained in the sunspot until the organics found them, or they ran out of oxygen again. That wasn't an option, and that wasn't what a real soldier would do. The last spider climbed aboard the transport ship. There was no time to waste now. Jeff lunged from their cover and raced toward the hatch. It began to spiral closed. He and David jumped, narrowly clearing the closing door. It snapped shut behind them. Jeff gasped for air, his lungs heaving. He dragged David immediately toward a tangle of hoses in the vast corridor. Blue light bathed them, making him feel like he was at the bottom of an ocean. An electric hum filled the air. There seemed to be a constant pulse resonating through the ship, as if the thing was alive with a beating heart hidden somewhere within its depths. The high ceiling and hatches lining the corridor dwarfed anything Jeff had seen on the sunspot. At least there were plenty of places to hide in the nooks and crannies of the oversized transport. David looked up at him, nearly as breathless as him.
"What do we do now?"
Chapter 17.
Sophie's blood boiled through her vessels, and an electricity surged through her muscles unlike anything she'd felt before. She glanced at the RVAMP strapped across Emmanuel's chest. A voice at the back of her mind told her she had to be prepared to use it, that the time was near. The organic transport ship refused to give them an escape. No matter how Sonya and Diego and Bauma tried to circumvent the biological input keys, the ship would not start its engines. They were stranded inside a perfectly good biosphere ship with a perfectly good rhino and a perfectly good organic ship. But the organics had been smarter all along. "We've been victims of a honeypot," Emmanuel said. He let out a long sigh. The bags under his eyes seemed to deepen as he slumped in his seat. "There's nothing else we can damn well do. We're going to run or hide?"
"Best bet is to hide," Bauma said.
He kicked open the door to the organic transport ship. "Maybe we can find a place in this ship to lay low."
"That's optimistic," Diego said. "You know how well hiding worked on Earth. They'll spot any high concentrations of water."
"Which means we may as well be standing out in the open," Holly said. Jamie and Owen cowered at her sides. "The only ones that could hide are these two."
"Now what's going to happen if we leave two kids on this ship by themselves?" Ort said. "The best option is to run and hope they don't spot us."
The pain flared in Sophie's head. Her vision blurred as a wet sheen formed over her eyes. She crumpled to her knees and pressed her palm to her forehead.
"Sophie!"
Emmanuel knelt by her. He put an arm over her shoulder and tried to pull her up.
"We've got to try running. Maybe we can make it to the colony. Maybe it isn't that much farther."
"Optimism has never worked out for us before," Diego said. "Why should it work now? We've got to be smart."
He tightened his grip around his rifle.
"And if we have to, we've got to fight."
Sophie blinked until her vision recovered. She shrugged Emmanuel off and stood on her own. Her muscles quivered. She wouldn't let the nanobots win. While her crew debated the merits of fighting or fleeing from their enemies, Sophie fought her own internal war. Fingers of dark thoughts encircled her mind, threatening to squeeze and send her unconscious once again. They were trying to strangle her consciousness. "No, you will not take me," she thought. The words crashed in her head like thunder as she repeated the internal mantra. At least momentarily, through sheer willpower, she fought off the tendrils of whatever it was that was trying to control her. Right now, she didn't need some hallucinogenic visions of what Mars used to be or where those multidimensional aliens were with their zoo of aliens. She was done with those type of deliriums. That wouldn't save her. It wouldn't save her crew. "Sonia, where are the organics?" Emmanuel asked. Before Sonia answered, an electric current flowed through Sophie. The leaden weight of dread scraped through to her core.
"They're already here," Sophie said.
"I can confirm 6 ships have arrived," Sonia said.
A boom shook through the Shakundo Kasu. The tremor knocked Sophie off balance, and she leaned against Emmanuel for support. The children screamed. Now it really did feel like lava was flowing through Sophie's brain. This time she knew it wasn't just pain flooding her from the nanobots' attempts to remodel and rewire her nervous system. Instead, the bots were relaying some kind of message to her, just like they had with all the visions. But with her refusal to accept the visions that would render her unconscious, the bots were less effective. All they relayed was a faraway sensation of anger and frustration. Maybe she was tuned in to the strange emotions of some random spider, or a sentinel, or one of the multidimensional aliens that seemed to enjoy toying with her. Whatever it was, the sensation of anger fueled her, bolstering her own resolve.
"We've got to fight them off," Sophie said through gritted teeth. "It's our only chance."
Diego looked like a pit bull ready to take a chunk out of an organic.
"Agreed." Holly seemed shocked by the statement, but she voiced no protest. Instead, she took one of the spare rifles they'd brought aboard the Rhino.
"Fine, if that's what it takes."
Emmanuel looked between Sophie and Bauma. He unstrapped the R-Vamp from his chest and charged it.
"Here's what we're going to do," Diego said. "One of the most defensible locations we've got is the corridors within Biome 2. I want to set up tight lines of sight outside the living quarters. The corridors there are cramped, and spiders can only come at us one at a time."
"And if they send in sentinels?" Bauma asked. "Those things will come through the ship like someone trying to piss out a kidney stone. The Shakundo Kasu is going to be hurting."
The ship shook again. Somewhere in the distance, the whine of metal grinding against metal reverberated, sending its ghastly wail through the corridors.
"If they send sentinels through the living quarters, the plan remains the same," Diego said. "Worst case scenario, we retreat to the Agri biome. There are a lot of dead trees in there for cover."
The groan and whine of the organics breaking through the ship's hull grew louder. Diego motioned for them to run. No one hesitated. Before they even made it to Biome 2 and the living quarters, the shrieks of spiders began to fill the corridors. Once the crew reached the living quarters, they dumped all the furniture they could into the hallways. It certainly wouldn't last long against the claws and mandibles of the spiders, but it was better than nothing. Then they waited. Seconds burned into long minutes. The screeches continued along with the scraping of claws over the deck. Something called out to Sophie. At first, she thought it was something she heard, and she shot up instinctively, searching the darkened corridors with her rifle sight. Nothing appeared. A moment passed before she realized that the voice she'd heard wasn't really a voice at all. It hadn't even called her name. Instead, it was more of a feeling, a visceral tugging at her insides that had beckoned her.
The nanobots.
The shrieks and scrapings continued. Sophie put down her rifle.
"What are you doing?"
Emmanuel whispered.
"Got to check something,"
she replied. She pulled the handheld OCT from her pack and took off her glove. Holding the device over the back of her left hand, she activated it with her right. All the blood vessels throbbing under her skin suddenly became clearly visible in the device's display.
She held her breath. If the nanobots were at critical mass, she'd see them glinting in bright red clumps through the OCT's screen.
She stole another nervous glance at Emmanuel's R-Vamp.
"Sophie?"
Emmanuel asked, understanding exactly what she was looking for.
She saw nothing, just the normal, dull glow of blood pushing through them. No clumps. Nothing to indicate she was in immediate danger of the nanobots taking over. Emmanuel let out a sigh of relief. He reached out and placed his hand atop hers, then gave her a reassuring smile.
Sophie returned his gesture with a weak smile. She was still in control for the time being. How long that would be was still an unknown. But for as long as she could, she would fight the organics, both those inside her own body and those outside.
She hoisted her rifle and aimed it down the corridor once more.
Valma, Diego, and Ort had set up nearby positions. In one of the cabins, Holly knelt in front of the children. A morose realization shifted through Sophie. This might be humanity's last stand. They would fight for their last dying breaths in the living quarters of a biosphere. There must be some irony to be found in their situation, but Sophie didn't care for it at that moment. There was only one thing on her mind, and it was no longer the nanobots. A shrill cry filled the corridor. The first spider poked its ugly head into the shadows of the passage. Its globular eyes seemed to catch sight of her immediately. The monster charged, its mouth open, ready to feast. A memory sparked in her mind as the onslaught began. Her father's favorite poem rang loud in her mind. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Sophie squeezed her rifle's trigger as EMP grenades and pulse rounds filled the hall. Spiders wailed as rounds cut through their flesh. Their corpses soaked the ground with blue blood. The macabre ritual replayed itself as each alien tried to throw themselves into the wall of gunfire. As her rifle bucked against her shoulder, the burning in Sophie's mind intensified. She fought both fronts of her battle with equal determination. Tonight, against the aliens that had taken Earth and her family, against the bastards that had driven humanity to extinction, she would rage. The remaining survivors of the GOA made it to the outskirts of Pelican AFB that afternoon with zero contacts. Athena couldn't believe it, but she had a feeling it wasn't blind luck. With all those drones zipping in Colorado's direction, she suspected Alexia had something to do with it.
3 o'clock, Griffin said.
He pointed to a chain-link fence surrounding a cluster of buildings. Athena counted 5 hangars and 2 smaller structures. The tarmac was a mess of military fighters, their charcoaled hulls littering the asphalt. The junkyard of expensive X-90 fighter jets reminded her the military had never stood a chance.
What should I be looking for?
She asked quietly. Griffin handed over a pair of binoculars.
Check that manhole.
She zoomed in on the ground and spotted what he had seen.
I bet that's where our friends are hiding,
he said. Athena nodded and lowered the binos. She pushed herself off the ground and loped back down the slope to where they had parked their vehicles. On the trek down, she checked the temperature.
130 degrees Fahrenheit.
Jesus, she whispered. If it weren't for the coolant circulation unit in her suit, she would be roasting right now. Her flesh was already covered with sticky sweat. Taylor, Malone, and Trish stood, their weapons cradled in front of the camouflage tarps covering the truck and van.
See anything up there?
Trish asked. There was nervousness in her voice. Not surprising, considering what they had all been through. They were teetering on the edge of being wiped out. A single mistake would cost them their lives. If the organics found them, they would die. If their suits malfunctioned, they would die. If Alexia was wrong about these people, if the survivors decided to ambush them, it wouldn't be that hard, she thought, looking at the remaining members of her crew. There were hundreds of ways this could go, and most of them ended in the same result. Death.
What did you see?
Trish entreated.
Griffin spotted something worth checking out,
Athena replied.
We'll leave the vehicles here and go by foot. Get your gear and prepare to move out.
Athena followed Griffin back to the truck and van to help Malone and Taylor unload. There wasn't much, just a few rucksacks packed full of their remaining food and the barrels of water.
Fill up your canteens and bottles. Bring as much water as possible, she ordered.
A few minutes later, the team had gathered all the gear they could carry. Griffin wore a rucksack stuffed full of food. 4 jugs of water hung from carabiners. Taylor and Malone split the other jugs, leaving Trish and Athena with the canteens and bottles.
"Let's move,"
she said. Griffin took point with his RPG launcher shouldered, and Athena fell in line behind him. Trish walked behind her, and Malone and Taylor took up the rear. Moving in combat intervals, they hurried across the sand, taking a detour around the hill. By the time they got to the metal fence, Griffin was moving extremely slowly. The load on his back and the heat had gotten too much for the big man.
"You good?"
Athena asked. He sucked in a breath, then nodded. Taylor pulled out the wire cutters and moved ahead of Griffin. After snapping through a section, he pulled it back, creating a door. Crouching down, the big retired Marine let out a grunt and moved through the gap.
"Watch the—"
Athena snapped, reaching out to grab at Griffin's pack. She wasn't fast enough, and a sharp edge of fence slashed one of the jugs hanging from his bag. Water sluiced out, painting the sand. Griffin turned to look at the damage.
"Oh, shit."
Trish and Malone both dropped to their knees to try and catch what water they could in their gloves.
"I'm sorry. Shit, I'm sorry," Griffin said.
"Just keep moving," she said. Taylor pulled the fence away, and Griffin finally moved to the other side. Athena motioned for the group to continue through and into the base. They made a run for the manhole cover to the east of the hangars. Charcoaled aircraft wings littered the tarmac. Several burned-out Humvees and pickup trucks sat where they had been destroyed months earlier. A battle had occurred here.
No.
A massacre. Her boot crunched over something hard, and she slowly pulled it back to reveal a desiccated femur.
"Good Lord,"
she thought. Her gaze roved over the scene before her. Blackened skulls and broken rib cages jutted up from the sand. Scattered long bones lay across the landscape like macabre confetti.
So many had died here.
Maybe on Invasion Day. Maybe this was the site of some later resistance. Either way, these were all good men and women who might have made a difference. She shook away the thoughts. Focus was key now. Focus would keep them alive. Maybe not for long, but long enough for Alexia to help them get off the planet. They were closing in on the manhole cover when a voice shouted for them to freeze. All at once, sand burst into the air to her left and right. Small shapes emerged from holes in the ground with weapons pointed at the team.
"Don't move!"
one of them yelled in a raspy voice. Griffin aimed his RPG launcher at the person.
"You drop yours!"
"We have you surrounded!"
came a voice. Athena turned toward the mound of sand from which the manhole cover had been removed. A man climbed out and moved into the sun. He was wearing a leather trench coat. His features were disguised by a mask and breathing apparatus, and long white hair whipped over his shoulders in the wind. Athena slowly scrutinized the other figures. They were all dressed in bulky camouflage uniforms and wearing the same breathing devices over their faces.
Kids,
she realized.
They were all just kids.
She lowered her rifle and instructed everyone else to do the same. The man marched toward Athena, his trench coat flapping behind him.
"Welcome to Pelican Air Force Base, the last human stronghold within 400 miles.
"Changing mags!"
Ort bellowed. Balma's rifle clicked. He was empty, too. The alien's assault was relentless. Sweat dripped down Balma's brow. Another spider came through the hall, squeezing past the corpses of its brethren. It swung its claws, flinging the loose berths and desks and tables against the bulkhead. The furniture broke into dangerous shrapnel as the spider flailed desperately to get at its prey.
"Changing!"
Balma roared before jamming in a fresh mag. As soon as it clicked into place, he resumed firing. Everything became a blur of kaleidoscopic fury. Rounds sliced through the air. They sizzled into flesh and carapace, churning the aliens into bits. EMP grenades let out their blue blaze in fantastic brilliance. Each blast cut through the shields of the organics. The scene repeated itself over and over. All concept of passing time eluded Balma. There was only his trigger finger and the rifle's sights. Wait for an EMP blast, sight up a spider's head, rinse and repeat. The deck was soon slick with alien blood as it streamed down the corridor, creeping under the improvised barricades Balma and the others hid behind. Diego's plan seemed to be working at keeping them alive and slowing the spiders. But while the movements of the individual spiders slowed, their assault never did. They threw themselves headlong into the gunfire and grenades. Nothing seemed to deter them. Not the volley of pulse rounds cutting into their flanks, or the corpses of their comrades that they were forced to climb over and around.
"How many more of these bastards do we have, Sonya?"
Emmanuel asked, his voice sounding ragged and hoarse.
"I am unable to calculate the number of organics aboard this ship,"
the AI replied in much too calm a tone of voice. Bauma wanted to curse her out.
"Why?"
was all he asked instead.
"The organics have cut off all sensor arrays on the Secundo Castle."
"Son of a bitch!" Bort said. "We can't do this forever!"
The Secundo Castle suddenly rocked, and Bauma crashed against the bulkhead. A sharp pain ricocheted through his elbow. Another explosion sent tremors through the ship. He caught himself on one of the tables they'd used as a barricade. A spider took the opportunity to climb toward him, close enough that it spit sprayed across his suit as it screamed. Bauma sent a surge of rounds into the creature before it could clamp its mandibles around him.
"What the hell is going on?"
Ort said. "Slingers," Bauma said. "Those scorpion things are finding another way into our biosphere." Another blast resonated through the ship. The spiders didn't seem at all perturbed by the external assault. They continued throwing themselves suicidally into the corridor. Bauma glanced back at Sophie and Emmanuel. Both of them had gone pale and looked horribly out of their element, wielding firearms instead of computers and microscopes. But still they fought, completely focused on the enemy showing themselves in front of the group. Behind them was Holly, still looking nervously out of the cabin where she had hidden the children. Holly looked at him with a worried expression, fear set deep in her eyes. No way would he let an alien touch her. He poured more fire into the seemingly endless stream of spiders. Then realization hit him harder than a sentinel charging a rhino.
"It's a goddamn trap," Bauma said. "They want us focused on the spiders."
More explosions rocked the ship. Dust fell from the ceiling, and from somewhere, a low series of blasts sounded like the organics had set off a massive chain of firecrackers. Another roar came rushing through the passages from behind them. It was quickly followed by a second, then a third. The pounding of heavy feet set the deck trembling.
"Sentinels!"
Diego yelled. Bauma glanced at the never-ending stream of spiders. If one or two sentinels caught them here, they would probably still be able to fend them off, but if there was a herd of the reptilian monsters, the chances of them surviving would be less than the chances of him finding oxygen while floating through space.
"We've got to fall back,"
Bauma said. Diego looked between him and the spiders. Bauma could tell the LT would hate to give up their entrenched position, but they all knew any barricades would be next to useless against a stampede of relentless sentinels. They needed to change tactics.
"Fall back to the agribiome," Diego said. "Ort, you take point. Everyone else falling behind him. I'll hold here until we're moving."
Ort led the others away as Diego continued firing. Bauma wanted to linger, to help the man and take out every last spider he could, but the cacophony of the sentinels forcing their way into the corridors outside the biosphere convinced him otherwise. He needed to protect the others. Diego threw a final EMP grenade coupled with an explosive one. A curtain of fire swept the corridor. Diego sprinted from the blast as heat overwhelmed the group. The spiders disappeared under the ball of malicious orange and red.
"Move, move, move!"
Diego said. They set off into the agricultural biome, and the space opened up before them. If Bauma squinted, the place looked like his old temporary home under Cheyenne Mountain. The long trails of crops had withered and died with neglect, and the orchards looked no better, offering hardly any leaves, much less a ripe piece of fruit to eat. Their most defensible location was beyond the orchard, where the supplies for taking care of the space were kept. There they could climb atop the storage structure to have sweeping lines of sight. Emmanuel's R-Vamp would be incredibly useful at leveling the playing field once the monsters stormed the wide-open space. With a single directed charge, he could knock out all their shields. Holly hid the children within the recesses of the supply chamber. This time she didn't stay with them, though.
"What the hell are you doing?"
Bauma asked when she knelt next to him atop the chamber.
"We're going to need every gun we've got," she said.
"You've got to stay down there."
"No, I'm not going out cowering in the dark."
There was no more time to argue. A plume of rolling fire and smoke showered part of the orchard with flaming debris. A group of sentinels surged into the chamber. They rode a wave of spiders that churned between them. The aliens advanced in one massive force, a relentless wall of clicking mandibles and snapping claws.
"Sophie, behind me!"
Emmanuel said. He aimed the R-vamp over the charging organic forces as Sophie stayed clear of its directed blast. With a pull of the trigger, the R-vamp whined and released a concentrated electromagnetic pulse. The pulse washed over the organics with nearly visible force. Their shields flickered and faded. Some even seemed to stumble in surprise, but the masses continued forward, unperturbed by the minor setback. Cold sweat trickled down Balma's neck, and his vision began to narrow. He shouldered his rifle. His trigger finger shivered slightly from all the adrenaline rushing through his blood vessels. If they could just hold these aliens off, maybe they could actually repel this attack. Maybe they could buy some time to escape. The clatter of alien claws over the ground was only rivaled by their rallying war cries. They powered forward like a medieval army of abominations. All Balma could do was squeeze his trigger and fire. Spider and Sentinel went down with the crew's concerted efforts. Alien after alien met their demise amid the crooked corpses of trees. Blood flew as each of Balma's rounds found its target. Aliens stumbled and fell, their bodies quick to be trampled by the other swarming aliens. Still, the crew managed to wipe out a swath of the organics before the beasts had cleared the orchard. They might yet stand a chance. A high-pitched shriek caught Balma, and he twisted. Some of the spiders had scaled the wall, putting the orchard and the massive horde between them. They'd snuck around and now clambered down toward the entrance to the supply chamber. The first one climbed up, its claws ready to strike Holly. Balma threw himself in front of Holly, firing his rifle all the way. Blue wounds pocked the spider's belly, nearly splitting its carapace in two. The monster's limbs twitched as its body recoiled and fell away. Another spider replaced it. Balma managed to land two shots before the thing struck out at him. He parried its stabbing claw with his rifle. The move didn't go unpunished. The spider snatched the rifle and tore it from Balma's hand. A claw sliced into his arm, catching his wrist and paralyzing his hand. Even if he wanted to fight back, he couldn't. He was pinned. He was defenseless against the crunching mandibles of the spider. His armored suit, reinforced as it was, didn't stand a chance. One bite, and he was finished. He would die here without ever knowing if their venture to Mars had even been worth it. Maybe his sacrifice would be in vain. The rest of the crew would die here, forgotten by the organics. The organics would move on, as would the universe, and humanity would lie forgotten, nothing but desiccated corpses and memories lost to the organics' march of unending war. Hot saliva sprayed across his visor as the spider lowered itself for a kill. This was it. A flash of color shot by Balma before the spider could finish him. It was Ort. The soldier threw his huge frame in front of the spider. The alien slammed its head against Ort's chest, knocking away the soldier's rifle. Ort cursed, but didn't let the alien throw off his attack. He grabbed one of the spider's descending claws and bent it until it snapped. The show of force impressed Balma. It didn't seem to have the same effect on the spider. The alien clamped its jaws around Ort's waist. Balma dove to recover his dropped rifle. The rest of the crew was diverting their fire, trying desperately to stem the tide of spiders now flowing over their position. They offered little support. Most of their lines of sight were blocked by aliens. Holly started firing into the spider, and Balma swung his recovered rifle around. It was too late. The spider tightened its mandibles around Ort until there was a sickening pop. The soldier fell away in two pieces, his entrails clinging to the spider's mouth. Pulse fire riddled the spider's head, and the beast slumped dead. Now all Balma saw was red. The red of Ort's blood. The red of the fire still raging on the other side of the biome. The red of fury flowing through him. But no amount of fury was going to change the tide of this battle. Balma could already see it. He inched closer to Holly, taking comfort in being near her in these final moments, knowing that they'd shared something powerful, if not fleeting,
at the end of the world. And maybe that was enough for him. Maybe his life hadn't been for nothing. As the spiders overwhelmed their position and the sentinels swung their huge claws like demonic reapers, Bauman knew what had happened. They had lost.
Chapter 18. The organic transport groaned as if it was a wooden ship swaying in violent ocean water. If Jeff closed his eyes, he could even pretend that was where he was. The saltiness of the dried sweat over his face helped reinforce the illusion. But when he opened his eyes, it was clear that he was in a place more unfamiliar than any he'd ever been to on Earth. Not that he'd traveled too far from home. He remembered going to Disney World once when David could barely talk. The excitement of being there with all the familiar characters and the scenery was easy to recall. He had felt like he was in a movie. Within the cavernous belly of the organic ship and its ghostly blue lighting, he felt like he and David were in a movie here, too. Just the wrong type of movie. The kind their dad never let them watch. A forest of wide tubes surrounded them, stretching from the ceiling down and into the deck. Between those tubes lay stacks of metal, crate-like objects. There was more than enough space for Jeff and David to hunker down behind one of those stacks. Several of the crates near them were more like cages. They had walls of bars with enough space between them. Jeff could peer through them to monitor the rest of the chamber.
"I hear another,"
David whispered. Jeff and David shrank back into the corner. There they took solace in the darkness. A strange shape. It didn't look like a spider or a sentinel or anything else Jeff had ever seen, moved about near the center of the massive chamber. Jeff watched the alien. It stood on two legs and had two long arms. It looked like some kind of humanoid crab, although it appeared more human than crab. It used its arms to remove something from a huge silver cylinder in the middle of the room, a much smaller cylinder. This smaller one was about the size of a can of soda and completely clear. Inside it sloshed a fluorescent green liquid. The alien seemed to hold it up to its face and examine it before leaving. This scene had repeated itself a number of times while Jeff and David had been hiding in this room. They had spent a long time sneaking through the corridors because of all the hoses and pipes and tubes stretching from the bulkhead to the deck. It had been easy enough to find hiding places. The ship seemed more like a jungle to Jeff than anything mechanical. Still, everywhere they went in the corridors, the spiders were pacing back and forth like sentries. No matter how well he thought they were hidden, he didn't want to be caught near a single one of them. This room, however, was different. There were no spiders, just the strange two-legged aliens that drifted in and out every once in a while. The aliens never turned on any overhead lights in here, so it stayed relatively dark. For the first time in Jeff's life, he found himself really thankful for the dark. He knew there were no monsters hiding in it, just him and David. They sat in the darkness as the ship hummed. A weight dragged on Jeff's eyelids at the rhythmic noise. His body was telling him to fall asleep. Exhaustion had finally crept up on him. But he couldn't let himself relax. Bauma had always told him the first time a soldier relaxes on the battlefield, it's his last time. That was always when the enemy got you. David, on the other hand, wasn't quite as disciplined. He stole a nap under Jeff's watchful eye. Jeff hovered over his brother, careful to make sure he wasn't in any danger, but still letting him sleep. David would need it. The path off this ship and whatever came next wasn't going to be easy. Another alien walked into the dark chamber and went to the silver cylinder. It took a vial of the green, glowing liquid and left. There was something strange about the way those aliens walked. Their gait wasn't like the animalistic prowling of the spiders or sentinels. They seemed so much calmer, almost like humans. Jeff shuddered. He guessed they were the ones in control of this ship, and somehow told the spiders and sentinels what to do. When another of the two-legged aliens walked in, Jeff squinted, trying desperately to see what its face looked like. The darkness prevented him from getting a really good look. The alien looked up past the glowing green liquid it held in its hands. Its eyes burned an icy blue stare into the darkness. Jeff froze. He swore the alien was looking right at him. His heart climbed into his throat and he couldn't breathe. The alien's gaze didn't waver. A coldness swept through Jeff's chest and his muscles tensed, ready to spring into action. If he moved fast, he might be able to fire on the alien. He could probably take it out before it ran and set off an alarm. But then what? The rounds wouldn't go unnoticed. They'd need another good hiding spot. Or worse, they'd need off the ship.
Oh, please, please, please look away, Jeff prayed. Please just go away.
His skin prickled as the cold grip of fear seethed under his flesh. Just from the way this alien's eyes glowed, he could sense an intelligence there that wasn't in the spiders. Those aliens were just monsters. This one was something different. The humanoid had to know he was there. Just had to. The alien took a step forward. Then its head swiveled. Finally, its eyes strayed from Jeff's. The alien marched to the other side of the chamber, took a seat, then started chugging the green liquid. Messy gulps slurped from the alien until it finished. Once the vial was empty, it went back up to the huge silver drum and grabbed another before disappearing into the hall.
So that green stuff is some kind of food?
Jeff's belly rumbled. He wondered if he could eat it. He hoped he wouldn't have to. But if they were on this ship much longer, they might not have a choice. At least his suit told him the atmosphere within the ship was nearly equivalent to Earth's. That meant he could breathe. The suit also told him it would be like he was up on a mountain. He would find it harder to breathe because there was slightly less oxygen in the air than he was used to. He decided that was probably okay. He'd hiked up tall mountains with David and his dad on Earth, and he remembered how he'd felt when short of breath. The sensation had been weird, but he'd gotten used to it. His suit beeped at him. His oxygen levels were low again, and the suit would need a recharge. Maybe it was time to test the atmosphere. Jeff sat down beside David again. His brother turned over. His eyes opened groggily and he yawned.
Are we still okay?
David asked, his voice sounding as if his mind was somewhere in dreamland.
Yeah,
Jeff said.
We're still safe, bud.
Good.
David stretched his arms, his hands balled into fists.
You think we'll actually make it back to Sophie and the others?
That's why we got on this ship.
I know, but if you say so.
I do.
David let out a soft chuckle.
Now you sound like Dad.
The reassuring whoosh of air blew through a ventilation duct overhead, rustling Jeff's suit.
Bud,
Jeff said,
I'm about out of oxygen again. You really suck that stuff down. It's hard not to when you breathe.
Now David sat up straighter, more alert.
Are you going to try the atmosphere? The suit said it's okay.
David nodded, but didn't seem reassured.
If you need to borrow the oxygen canister from my suit...
No, that's yours, Jeff said.
I'm going to let mine recharge in here.
He took a deep breath.
The suit said the air's okay.
He repeated the words. He knew he wasn't just trying to reassure David, he was trying to convince himself.
It's okay to be afraid,
the words echoed through time, resonating in his head.
But it's the brave and courageous who act in the face of fear.
Jeff took off his helmet. There was no whoosh of air to signify a drastic change in pressure. It was just peaceful and calm. At least his brains hadn't come flying out his nostrils, sucked away by the alien atmosphere.
Can you breathe?
David asked. His voice sounded tinny through Jeff's helmet, which was now by his side. Jeff shrugged. He was holding his breath, afraid of what that first intake of air might mean. Maybe it was full of poison that would make his body go rigid and destroy his brain from the inside out anyway. Maybe it didn't carry enough oxygen after all, and no matter how much he gulped down, he would suffocate.
There was only one way to tell.
He closed his eyes, blew out,
and sucked in a deep breath, filling his lungs with the ship's air. A coolness spread from his chest to his limbs. He didn't feel dizzy, and he didn't feel like he was suffocating. He felt relief. The air was dry, but didn't feel so much different than Colorado. There was a slightly metallic flavor to it, but Jeff didn't let that bother him either.
"It's okay,"
Jeff said. He felt happy. They were no longer bobbing along in white rapids struggling for a branch to hold onto. They had a lifesaver right here. They could breathe the organic atmosphere in the ship and recharge the suits. Jeff lost track of time as he got used to having his helmet off. Eventually, David had to take his off, too. They soaked in the atmosphere. For the first time since they'd gotten to Mars, they felt like they weren't fleeing from something. They were on the enemy ship, but still, it was reprieve from all the running and fighting. Eventually, though, it had to end. He and David would need to find the others, and they would need food and water. But for now, he traded stories with David about life with their dad and all the animals and foods they missed from Earth. All the things they hoped they would get a chance to do when Earth returned to normal, like camping and snowboarding and video games. It was probably all a fantasy, unrealistic, just like Disney World. Jeff knew that, but it felt good to pretend there might be a time when he didn't have to be a soldier. The humming in the ship crescendoed until a dull roar reverberated through the ship's hull. The already dim lights in the hold went completely black. Jeff tossed his helmet on and immediately engaged the night vision elements. Almost as soon as he did, the entire ship shook. Metal groaned and settled, and a loud hissing sounded just outside their chamber. All the lights flared back on. A persistent, low noise echoed in a ghostly wail.
"Is that an alarm?"
Jeff asked. David shrugged, looking white behind his visor. Footsteps pounded through the corridors. Some sounded strangely like human bootsteps. Maybe it was those two-legged creatures they'd seen? Others scraped by with the familiar scritch, scratch of the spider's claws, and there was also the heavy thumping of the sentinels.
"They're getting off,"
David said. He looked up at his older brother.
"Should we?"
A wave of heat swept through Sophie's body. The nanobots weren't causing this, nor was it the anger of the organics being transmitted through the minuscule machines. This was a fire of her own making. Pure rage and adrenaline coursed through her with unbridled intensity, crashing through her like a sentinel let loose in a subway full of hapless humans. The rifle still kicked against her shoulder as she sought to bring justice to every one of the organics overtaking their position. Balma was bleeding. Ort was dead. The children were screaming and Holly was firing desperately at a spider, absorbing her blows. Diego showed no expression, merely fighting like a machine without any perception of mortality. And none of it would be enough. The screams of the spiders, charging and dying, smashed over her in a tidal wave of fury. Sentinels pounded the deck. A fire consumed half the biome, the acrid odor of burning plastic and smoke stinging her nostrils. She couldn't tell if her suit had been compromised or if it was just her imagination. Maybe it was the nanobots. She had no time to whip out the OCT and check if the nanobots had passed the point of no return. That hardly mattered now. Whatever plans the organics might have had for her were going to be dashed across the deck under the bloodied claws of the aliens. "Sophie, watch out!" Emmanuel yelled. He blasted a spider crawling near her. Pulse fire tore three of the spider's legs off and punctured its thorax. Blood wept from the wounds, but still it pulled itself towards Sophie. She aimed at the beast. Its eyes searched her, each of the compound orbs seeming to measure her up with laser-like intensity. A burst from her rifle ended the spider's assessment.
"One down," Sophie thought. "Too many to go."
Another spider scrambled over the corpse of its fallen comrade. It reared back at Sophie. This time Emmanuel was caught fending off a spider of his own. Sophie tried to fire at the beast, but it shot a claw forward that knocked her aim off. She barely avoided getting impaled by that plunging claw. But all she'd accomplished was delaying the inevitable. The spider towered over her.
Its mandibles snapped together, and ropes of saliva dripped from them. Everything seemed to slow down. The blast of gunfire sounded hollow and weak. The chorus of alien voices was drowned out by the blood rushing through Sophie's ears. Her heart thumped as though trying to carry her away from this alien by itself. There was no escape now. No more fighting back. This was where it ended.
No, Sophie thought. This isn't how it ends. This is just the beginning. Stop. Stop. Stop!
The spider lowered its mandibles until they found her waist. An intense pressure squeezed at her insides as it began to close its mouth around her, threatening to split her just as the other one had done to Ort. All the air rushed from her lungs as the monster tightened its grip. She could no longer breathe.
Stop!
She screamed in her head. She felt the vibrations of the nanobots coalescing within her, and the voices of the organics echoed in her skull. Thousands of years of rage and a relentless quest to rebuild what had once been laced those voices. She tried to picture Emmanuel. He was the last person or thing she wanted to see before she died. Not this alien landscape that she didn't give a shit about. She wanted Emmanuel in that moment, and the organics were taking even that small freedom from her.
Stop!
She willed the word in her head again with a mental force so strong it tightened all her muscles. The visions fell away immediately. The organic voices stopped calling to her. Everything went still. Sophie opened her eyes. The spider still had its mandibles wrapped around her waist, but it was no longer squeezing. The crackle of fire still sounded in the thin atmosphere, but the sound of gunfire had ceased. Had everyone been killed? Was she the last one left? Left just so she could witness the result of the slaughter. All the others were held in the jaws of spiders, just like her. Even Owen and Jamie had been lifted from their hiding place in the supply chamber. All their rifles had been tossed aside, and all the Arvamps they had were nothing but piles of smashed plastic, scarred metal, and tangled wire. She caught Emmanuel's eyes. He looked broken. One hand twitched under the spider's grip. He was trying to reach out for her. There was nothing she could do but look back at him, hoping her gaze said what words cannot express. Then, the spiders let them all go. Sophie sucked in a deep, painful breath. The spider backed away and crouched, as if bowing to her. The others were left in their positions, though their spiders didn't back away with the same reverence.
"What's going on?"
Emmanuel asked. He tried to take a step towards Sophie, but the spider guarding him growled, slamming a claw down in his path. Only Jamie and Owen were allowed to move near to one another. The two children clung to each other for dear life.
"It's going to be all right," Thalma said to them. "We're going to be okay."
He was holding his left wrist. Blood dripped from the puncture in his suit. Holly tried to comfort the children, but was prevented from going any nearer to the children, just as Emmanuel had been when he'd moved toward Sophie. "Did you do that?" Diego asked, the only one that didn't seem awed by the sudden change in events. "Was it those nanobots?"
"I don't know,"
Sophie said. The voices in her head were still quiet, and the pain didn't come washing back. In fact, she hadn't felt so whole, so herself, since before she'd been bedridden back in Cheyenne Mountain. Diego still stared at her.
"What's going on?"
"Honestly, I don't know."
She wished she had a better answer. If she could control these aliens, if somehow she'd stopped them, she wanted to know how she'd done it. How she could convince them to let her go. To let the others go.
No answer came to her. Instead, the sea of aliens parted. Sentinels and spiders alike moved back into the dead trees and trampled crops. They left a wide pathway full of claw marks. Something else strode toward Sophie. The thing was unlike any alien she'd ever seen. It walked on two legs and had long, spindly arms. Black armor covered the alien and seemed to protect its sinewy frame. Six more humanoid aliens paraded toward them, each carrying what looked to be some kind of rifle. The humanoids walked directly toward Sophie. A new sensation flowed through her. She felt reinvigorated. Her muscles bulged, and she thought that if she wanted, she could tear one of the dead trees from the ground. Thoughts raced through her mind, chasing ideas and hypotheses she'd never followed through. Mathematical equations seemed to click into place with the ease of gears churning each other on. All at once, she felt she understood the frailty of the human condition and the precipice over which it teetered. At any moment, the species might plummet. But not if every last human felt and thought like she did in that moment.
"It feels good, doesn't it?"
the lead humanoid asked.
"The power, the intelligence, the fuel pumping through your bloodstream, the feeling that you could do so much more now than any time before in your insignificant life. This is the promise I made, Sophie, the greatness that we can choose to become."
A tingle chased fear down Sophie's spine. There was something familiar about the voice emanating from that humanoid. Was it one of the aliens she'd seen in her visions? "Who are you?" she asked. The helmet retracted back from the humanoid's head, disappearing into its carapace. Sophie's stomach turned over and her knees went weak. The face that shone there had the pointedness and seriousness of a crustacean. It had hollow cheeks, but pronounced cheekbones, and a high forehead that undoubtedly shielded brain matter with more computational power than Sonia. Eyes glowed at her with a sapphire iciness, seeming to reflect the orbs that had desiccated human bodies back on Earth. And even through all those changes, Sophie still recognized the man this alien had once been. A scientist, like herself and Emmanuel, one that had promised them humanity had a future in the stars. The sole reason she'd been so intent on coming to Mars. She'd grasped his words like a lifeline, knowing that his promises of a refuge here couldn't have been without merit. This humanoid alien was, or at least had once been, Dr. Eric Hoffman.
"Come with me," he offered her his outstretched hand. "I'm our future, Sophie."
Chapter 19. The interior of the drone was smaller and tighter than the orb Noble had spent his imprisonment in, and now he had to share the cramped space. Roots clung to the gooey cocoon beside him. The walls pulsated around them, veins cobwebbing across the skin of the drone. It appeared to be alive, and Noble felt like a small fish inside the belly of a whale. He had always thought these ships were controlled by some alien artificial intelligence or a mothership, but now he wondered if the drones were themselves living creatures. A cackle came from Roots.
"I'm sorry about Ribbit," Noble said.
He thought back to the alien dying in the pyramid. At least it had happened quickly. There was comfort in that, and in knowing the creature wasn't suffering anymore. Noble reached out to Roots. Its small orange lips parted and let out another cackle. There was nowhere else for the alien to go now that its bulb head and torso were pressed against the hide of the drone. All three of its compound eyes blinked. Another cackle reverberated out of its mouth as the alien showed off its small, pointy teeth.
"Whoa!"
Noble said, holding up both hands. No need to get angry. I'm your friend.
Roots looked down at the translucent floor, and Noble did the same. The drone continued circling the pyramid, providing them an aerial view of the moon base. Blue light streaked into the sky as more of the aliens from the zoo ship were sacrificed to the multidimensional's god.
Sons of bitches, he cursed.
Roots tilted its head again.
Not you,
Noble said. He moved for a better look at the darkness above. Several large organic cruisers hovered over the surface, blinking like beacons in a black sea. All across the horizon, lancing blue light shot into orbit. Noble couldn't see them, but there must be other pyramids out there. Other places where the organics were sacrificing alien races and pulling new species to join their ranks like the multidimensional entity had done to him and Roots.
We're two of the lucky ones,
Noble whispered.
Lucky, depending on who you ask.
While they had been saved from death, Noble had a feeling that joining the organic army could be an even worse fate. There were so many questions in his mind. Why him? Why not other humans? And probably the most pressing, why were the organics setting up the sacrifices here and now? Unless there were other humans in the organic army, perhaps they had already transported some of them from Earth. He wagged his head, still expecting to wake up from this nightmare. The drone suddenly shot away from the pyramid, knocking Noble against the wall. He gritted his teeth as the forces pulled on his body. The drone roared away from the alien base. All across the skyline, other drones raced away from the moon toward the massive cruisers in orbit. Maybe their bellies were also filled with prisoners chosen to join the organic army. He pulled his spine away from the skin of the drone and jumped when a sudden jolt ripped through his body, the same electrical jolt he'd experienced from touching the walls of his old orb prison. But this time he wasn't touching anything besides the floor of the drone. He craned his neck to see Roots reaching out with all four arms. Sponge-like appendages that were some sort of fingers touched Noble's flesh.
What are you doing?
He muttered. The response came in his mind, and he closed his eyes. His vision transported into what looked like a wormhole. Stars shot by, and then the journey stopped, the darkness replaced by a pink glow. Only seconds passed before he realized this was a memory Roots was sharing with him. They were on an alien planet, a place with rolling purple hills and blue flowers with long, glowing stems the size of trees. Purple kite-like creatures sailed through the pink sky, wings extended as they glided over pastures where beasts that looked like horses grazed with elephant-like trunks. The memory was from Root's childhood, over 300 years ago, on his home planet. Noble knew because Roots told him. Not in human words, but Noble just knew. The imagery changed to a forest where dozens of other aliens that looked just like Roots squirmed over purple grass. Flowers with petals the size of a car shifted in the wind. A group of four aliens strolled with Roots. His family, Noble realized. They were all over 100 years in age, just a fraction of their life expectancy. Unlike humans, these creatures did not have a sex. They were born from seeds, like trees on Earth. But they had brains and communicated through touch. Noble watched Roots squirm along with his family toward a teal lake set between trees the size of skyscrapers. Red bulbs covered the bark-like warts. But these weren't blemishes, they were nests, the home of Roots and his species. Roots stopped to drink with his wormy legs, dipping the apparatuses into water where glowing fish glided. A crunching echoed through the forest, and all the aliens looked up as tree branches and hunks of bark crashed into the lake. The red cocoons plummeted with them, families falling to their deaths. Roots backed away and tried to run, but froze when organic ships descended from the canopy far above. Cackling came from all directions, the cries of the frightened and peaceful aliens. These creatures had no way to defend themselves. They simply watched as their lake was sucked up into the belly of a massive organic ship. Then came the legions of spiders.